Random House Audio presents The Downhill Lie, A Hacker's Return to a Ruinous Sport by Carl Hiaasen. This is Carl Hiaasen. Dawn of the Dead. In the summer of 2005, I returned to golf after a much-needed layoff of 32 years. Attempting a comeback in my 50s wouldn't have been so absurd if I'd been a decent player when I was young. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. At my best, I'd shown occasional flashes of competence. At my worst, I'd been a menace to all carbon-based life forms on the golf course. On the day I gave up golfing, I stood 6 foot even, weighed a stringy 145 pounds, and was in relatively sound physical shape. When I returned to the game, I was half an inch taller, 21 pounds heavier, and nagged by the following age-related ailments: elevated cholesterol, a bone spur deep in the right rotator cuff, an aching right hip, a permanently weakened right knee due to a badly torn medial meniscus that was scraped and repaired in February 2003 by the same orthopedic surgeon who'd once worked on a young professional quarterback named Dan Marino. The doctor had assured me that my injury was no worse than Marino's. Then he'd added, with a hearty chuckle, "But you're also not 22 years old." Other factors besides my knee joint and HDL had changed during my long absence. When I'd abandoned golf in 1973, I'd been a happily married father of a 2-year-old son. When I returned to the sport in 2005, I was a happily remarried father of a 5-year-old son, a 14-year-old stepson, and a 34-year-old son with 3 kids of his own. In other words, I was a grandpa. Over those 3 busy and productive decades, a normal, well-centered person would have mellowed in the loving glow of the family hearth. Not me. I was just as restless, consumed, unreflective, fatalistic, and emotionally unequipped to play golf in my 50s as I was in my teens. What possesses a man to return in midlife to a game at which he'd never excelled in his prime, and which in fact had dealt him mostly failure, angst, and exasperation? Here's why I did it. I'm one sick bastard. The Last Waltz. My first taste of golf was as a shag caddy for my father. He often practiced hitting wedges in our front yard, and I'd put on my baseball glove and play outfield. Dad seemed genuinely happy when I finally asked to take golf lessons. I was perhaps 11 or 12, too young to realize that my disposition was ill-suited to a recreation that requires infinite patience and eternal optimism. The club pro was Harold Perry, a pleasant fellow and a solid teacher. He said I had a natural swing, which, I've since learned, is what pros always say at your first lesson. It's more merciful than "you'd have a brighter future chopping cane." The early sessions did seem to go well, and Harold was encouraging. As time passed, however, he began chain-smoking heavily during our lessons, which suggested to me the existence of a chronic problem for which Harold had no solution. The problem was largely in my head and fell under the clinical heading of wildly unrealistic expectations. My first major mistake was prematurely asking to join my father for 9 holes, a brisk Sunday outing during which I unraveled like a crackhead at a Billy Graham crusade. This was because I'd foolishly expected to advance the golf ball down the fairway in a linear path. The experience was marred by angry tears, muffled profanities, and long, brittle periods of silence. Worse, a pattern was established that would continue throughout the years that Dad and I played together. Golfers like maxims, and here's a good one. Beginners should never be paired with good players, especially if the good player is one's own father. The harder I tried, the uglier it got. To say that I didn't bear my pain stoically is an understatement. Dad suffered along with me, and so did his golf game, which added to my sullen mood an oppressive layer of guilt. There were rare sunbursts of hope when I managed to hit a decent shot or sink a putt, but usually a pall of Nordic gloom followed us around the links. My father was a saint for tolerating my tantrums and sulking. He never once ditched me. Whenever I asked to tag along on his regular weekend game, he'd say yes, despite knowing what histrionics lay ahead. When I grew taller, he generously bought me a set of Ben Hogan's, which were so gorgeous that at first I was reluctant to throw them. Interestingly, I have no recollection of my father and me completing a round of golf, with the exception of a father-son charity event, and the only reason I didn't flee on the back nine was that I wasn't sure how to get back to the clubhouse. I can't recall our final score, probably for the same reason that victims of serious traffic accidents often cannot remember getting in the car. Trauma wipes clean the memory banks. In high school, some of my friends took up golf, and occasionally I joined them on weekends. Surrounded by retirement developments, the Lauderdale Lakes course was a scraggly, unkempt layout that was chosen by us for its dirt-cheap, all-day green fees. Despite the trampled fairways and corrugated greens, I actually started enjoying myself. The mood was loose and raunchy, and it was uplifting to discover that my friends stroked the ball as erratically as I did. We were the youngest players on that course by half a century, a disparity that every round precipitated one or two prickly confrontations with foursomes who were less agile and alert. That, of course, only added to the sportive atmosphere. Occasionally, we also played a chaotic par 3 layout, upon which I once bladed a 9-iron dead into the cup for an ace. It was a feat that I never replicated. My name, misspelled naturally, was etched into a hokey hole-in-one plaque that was hung among literally hundreds of others in that funky little clubhouse. My father was undoubtedly relieved that I'd found other golfing companions, freeing him to resume his regular Sunday rounds in peace. Unfortunately, bursitis was making it increasingly difficult for him to swing a club, and by the time I left for college, he was playing infrequently and in pain. During my first semester at Emory University, I got married and soon thereafter became a father. So for a time, I was too preoccupied and too broke for golf. In the summer of 1972, I entered the journalism college at the University of Florida in Gainesville, where I reconnected with my high school buddies. The university maintains a top-notch par 72 that was, in those days, open to students for $2.50. It was there I broke 90 for the first and only time before giving up the game. I was walking 18 in a group that included a good friend, Al Simmons. He was hitting the ball well, but I was all over the map, scrambling for bogeys and doubles. In the midst of butchering a long par 4, I improbably holed out a full 7-iron for a birdie. Exclamations of amused wonder arose from Big Al and the others. Then, supernaturally, two holes later, I knocked in a 9-iron from about 110 yards. This time, Al keeled over as if felled by a sniper. Once before, I'd seen him collapse like that on a golf course. It had happened when he was kneecapped by a drive struck by Larry Robinson, a member of our own foursome, the most astoundingly bad tee shot that I've ever witnessed to this day. Al had been next up, standing dead even with Larry and seemingly safe, when Larry's abominably mishit ball shot off the tee at a 90-degree angle and smashed into Al's right leg. The impact sounded like a Willie McCovey home run. Incredibly, Al was upright within minutes and resumed playing with only a slight limp. But after my second holeout on that morning in Gainesville, he lay lifeless in the fairway with a glassy expression that called to mind Queequeg, the Pacific Island cannibal in Moby Dick, who'd lapsed into a grave trance upon seeing his fate in a throw of the bones. Eventually, Al arose and rejoined our group, but he was rocky. I completed the round with no further heroics, yet I walked off the 18th green with an 88, my best score ever. That was in the summer of 1973, and by the end of the year, I was done. The Hogan sat in a closet, gathering dust. Richard Nixon was hunkered like a meth-crazed badger in the White House. Hank Aaron was one dinger shy of Babe Ruth's all-time home run record, and The Who had just released Quadrophenia. At age 20, I was more or less at peace. Toad Golf. My divorce from golf was uncomplicated and amicable. When I came home from college on visits, my father and I would spend Sunday afternoons watching the PGA on television. Dad had always...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?